to the work of this committee in that the committee's designated funds to Minnesota Management and Budget to help with this. This did have cost to it. We had to work with MnGeo. They got software that was free, but they've had to do some customization to that software. That's costed some dollars. As I mentioned, the Office of Enterprise Technology, the staff augmentation contract. So there have been significant resources that have been needed to achieve the level of transparency we were able to do with ERA.
The federal government basically sent the money out, but they didn't give the state auditor any money to follow up on it. They didn't give, you know, the state government any money to do it, but they said, we want the transparency, we want the reports, but, you know, that wasn't part of the package that came to us. So,
right. Yes, Mr. Chair, many of the programs did not receive a specific administrative allocation. They've developed a statewide cost allocation plan method, which is extremely cumbersome, but we are pursuing that to try and recoup some of the federal funds. Also, state data exists in many formats. With the federal stimulus funding, the data elements were defined by the federal government at the beginning across all of the different state agencies. So we had the information in one common format, and I already mentioned the complexity about, can you map it? Do you make it available in a report? Do you make it available in a raw data set, which when we did that with the 1512 data, the way they define things, they don't list organizations' names. They define them by DUNS numbers. So somebody, just the general public going on to look, looks at a DUNS number, they would have no idea what state agency that is. So it can be complicated when you put the raw data out there as well. But what we tried to do was address multiple audiences and make the information available through multiple mechanisms. We are now in the midst of the January, our second reporting cycle, and so some updates for that, some changes to the January reporting cycle. The Federal Office of Management and Budget on December 18th issued revised guidance for how you calculate jobs. What they are doing is, instead of cumulatively reporting jobs information, each recipient of funds will just report jobs information for the particular reporting quarter. So for January, it will be the jobs impact of October 1st, 2009 through December 31st, 2009. They also had what they referred to previously as a but-for test. And what that was but for the receipt of stimulus funds, would this job have existed? Now they have designated, there was a report that was issued by GAO that said it would be very hard to audit the jobs information. And so what the recommendation was from GAO was that any job in which the salary or wages are funded with Recovery Act funds, those are the jobs that should be counted. So there are some changes that are going to make it complicated to compare January's data to the data that we had in October. Also, due to the late issuance of the guidance, even though the Act specifically required reports to be due on the 10th of the month, the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board decided to extend that reporting deadline to January 15th. Then last Friday, this is not in the slide, they late in the day extended the deadline an additional week. So that additional 5 days provided a tremendous leeway to state agencies to be able to implement the new jobs reporting guidance, collect information from all of their subrecipients, and in many cases, state agencies had to collect information twice from their subrecipients because they collected it under the previous guidance and then had to collect it under the new guidance.
Oh, sorry, Russ.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So states like to compare themselves or contrast themselves with other states with regard to job information. If a state chose particular projects that were labor-intensive, they could end up with more direct jobs paid for out of these funds, but not necessarily improving the old overall job situation for a given state if the funds were not in projects that were necessarily labor intensive, but maybe, I mean, I can't think of something, an example, but reporting the information that way, and I guess reporting it the other way as well, could be gamed to give a state and I'm not suggesting Minnesota, but give a state a better report by comparison with a state that made other decisions that were more appropriate for the economic conditions of that second state. Wouldn't you say? So it's not going to be, or my conclusion would be, it's not necessarily going to be an when we're looking from state to state to see who's doing a good job, it's not going to be necessarily an apples to apples comparison, even if you're only looking to the jobs that you can directly say came about because of project costs. Would you Ms. agree, Weber? Or am I going down a bad trail there?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think you're correct. It also even goes down to the subrecipient level. Some of the programs are formula-based, and they get allocated out to programs on a formula, and then the subrecipient decides how they're going to allocate those dollars. Mm-hmm. In some cases, one subrecipient might choose to fund salaries and wages, and another subrecipient might choose to fund something else that isn't salaries and wages. And so looking at
purchase of equipment. Or
right,
something, whatever.
Right, exactly. So you have to be sure to look at it. Also, I think for this January reporting period, things are going to be extremely complicated to look at states on a state-by-state analysis, because when we talk with states, the implementation of this new guidance has been extremely challenging. And when you look at across multiple sectors, some states are still updating data, making sure it's under the new guidance, that they didn't report the jobs information under the old guidance, and that's going to be an ongoing process. A key element, the last bullet, this is a good transition to the last bullet here, is that the Recovery Board also decided in the law they're required to publish the information on the 30th of the month. Last quarter, that was it. On the 30th it got published, there were no changes to the data. They have now decided that they're going to allow for ongoing updates to the data up until the next quarterly reporting period, and they'll update the information on recovery.gov. So it will always be somewhat of a moving target.
Senator Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify then. So if, say, school districts got some money through the Recovery Act and were able to retain or hire new teachers or assistants to help with some program, then they would be counted as FTEs or not? And then the second question is, but then it seems, for instance, if MnDOT or MnDOT did receive some money, but they contract to construction companies for a specific project, then those employees would not be counted, even though they were hired directly as a result of the stimulus money?
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and Senator, any salaries or wages, whether it's a contract or a grant, are counted in the job count. So in the example of a school district funding, if they're using their dollars to pay the salaries and wages of teachers, they would count that in their FTE calculation. In the example of MnDOT, if they're contracting for a road project, the salaries and wages paid to the workers that are working on that project are counted in the calculation.
Okay, go ahead.
The jobs impact then for our last reporting quarter, we reported 11,852 FTEs. They do have a full-time equivalent calculation that's run. It's not a headcount. Changes to the jobs reporting, as I indicated, will make it difficult or impossible to compare last quarter's reporting to this quarter's reporting. Eventually, we will be able to look at quarterly reporting after subsequent quarters under the new guidance, and we will update that information each quarter. In terms of our future for where we'd like to go with our transparency efforts on our website, is in February we're going to be expanding the recovery map to have customization of certain areas such as school districts. So educational funding will be defined by the school district geographic boundary. We'll also look at things like workforce development regions for economic information as well. We're also looking at developing additional interactive reports to identify projects that impact specific legislative districts. We were exploring the option of mapping that information and ran into quite a few complexities with that because projects are not identified by legislative district, and often they overlap into multiple districts. So that's one data element that we looked at and decided the best approach would be able to make an interactive report available versus putting it on a map. The recovery information will be updated quarterly, which aligns with the federal reporting requirements.
To close up this part of the presentation, just want to mention a couple of other department transparency efforts. As a department, we've tried to find ways to get information out there, even as we're busy on a number of other fronts. One report that just came out on Friday responds to a legislative request for the Children's Resources Pilot Project. You know, an interesting example of trying to find out how much money in the state's budget is spent for on behalf of children. Going through all of the accounts, I believe over, gosh, I should remember the number, it's like nearly like 40,000 allotments, trying to find out exactly how much in our accounting system is being spent for that demographic group. It starts to raise some of those transparency issues of how do you sort through all of this information that you see in ways that mean something to legislators, to the public, and how can you do that on an ongoing basis? I think this one demonstration is a good example of how difficult it is, but also just sort of how we all want to get to a place where you can see the budget and other information in multiple different ways. The Transparency and Accountability Project is something that looks backwards, trying to say how have we spent our money, what does our checkbook look like, and without putting private data out there, without saying you received general assistance medical care or Minnesota care or anything else like that, it's like if you're an entity, a vendor or something, some entity that's doing business with the state, how much was received, and you know, basically how does that stack up. That's another set of information that's out there, and that we put that out last year. Working with Senator Rest and others to try and make sure we can find some ways to, even with our old accounting system, share information and get the information that people want out there. Going forward, looking to replace that map system with the SWIFT system. The searchable database is a legislative requirement in that project, and that's certainly one element of that. Again, trying to assess how we collect data and how we put it together so that the data comes out and can be used in a usable form. So with that, I think we'd like to just do a quick demonstration of some of the information that's on our website. I should say that in addition to collecting the data or setting the data standards, collecting it, putting it onto the website, we also have an effort within our department right now on internal controls, trying to assess after the fact how our agency's processes and procedures fitting with the ARRA requirements so that we have a strong process not only for these federal funds, but ultimately for all funds going forward. We've been building up that group and are really pleased that they've been working with us on the Recovery Act.
Okay, here's the website.
Okay, here is the website. This is the homepage of the Recovery Act site, Minnesota's Recovery site. And sorry, I just clicked on something. Going from left to right, then, what we have available are different data sets. You can look up here and get into the different data that we've talked about today. We also have available information so that the public can see what has Minnesota Management and Budget instructed state agencies to do with respect to the reporting and the additional data element requirements. We have available for individuals who are interested in grant opportunities or contract opportunities a link into the Office of Grants Management site, links to the federal agency grant site, as well as the contracting site that's available through Minnesota, through the Department of Administration. Along the right-hand side of the screen, then, we also have information here. I mentioned earlier in the presentation the ability to report fraud, waste, and abuse. So that's right on the front page. The front page of our site is really designated to be a window into all of the information that an individual might be interested in. The raw data that we talked about is available in an Excel spreadsheet, and I would open it up for you, but it's quite large and as I mentioned, it is identified by the DUNS number, so typically is not useful to the general public, but the raw data is out there for individuals who want to look at additional information. The interactive reports that were developed, try this one more time. Okay. The interactive reports are designed to allow the user to look for information either by state agency or by a category of funding. So in the example of a state agency look, you can see then by clicking on state agency that you get a listing of all of the state agencies that are administering stimulus funding. By looking at the Department of Human Services as an example, you'll then see all of the various awards that they are administering with information about what the particular project is, how much has been awarded, the amount that they've spent so far, and then what the total jobs calculation is, as well as how far along is the project in its life cycle. Looking at a particular award, then, you can click on and get to what we refer to as the project-level information. So this is an award that's administered by the Department of Human Services, and it's allocated out to the local community. This then shows you all of the different recipients of funds under that award. It gives you a description of what they're using the dollars for, tells you how much they've been awarded, how much they've been paid so far from the state, and then what jobs they reported, as well as the project start and end dates. If we go back to the interactive reports and look at the awards by category, then, because somebody might not know, the public might not know what state agency administers a particular program they're interested in getting information on. And so in this case, you can see that the funding is available by different categories, and it allows you to drill down. If we look at energy and environment, it allows us to drill down to different programs that are administered by the different agencies. If we look at the Department of Commerce, for example, then we can get to all of the programs under the Department of Commerce under this particular category of funding and look at a particular program to see who they've awarded the dollars to. So if we look at the State Energy Program as an example, then we get an overview of who received funds and what they're reporting for the funds they've received. And then finally to the recovery map. And this was, we were experiencing some technical problems. The recovery map, as I mentioned, was developed in partnership with MnGeo at the Department of Administration, and they're actually hosting this on their server for us. We provide data to them, and they update the information on a quarterly basis for us. They're also looking at doing some enhancements. And I know that David Arbright from MnGeo is here in case you're interested in hearing from him about their role in the project. The recovery map then allows for an individual to look at the stimulus funding that's available. And if you'll look at the pie chart here, it identifies the different areas of funding. This is looking at the overall stimulus funding category. It identifies the different categories of funding, the percentage to each of those categories. And if you hover or use the mouse over tools, you can then see the actual dollar amount. Along the top of the map, we have various categories of funding similar to the interactive report. So if we look at energy and environment, what we will see then is an allocation by county of energy and environment dollars. The leafs identify the different counties, and the size of the leaf represents the total amount of funding that's available. So if you click on Grant County here, for an example, that's a larger leaf. It then tells you the overall funding. You can then drill down to the individual programs that are funded at the local level and get information about the project that was funded at the local level. Also, this is not we're not able to see both, but the pie chart along the bottom also changes based on which county you've selected. You can also select show individual projects on the map, and thumbtacks come up that identify where exactly a project is taking place. In this example, Tri-Valley Opportunity Council, if we click on that, we see that they received weatherization assistance dollars, a description of the project, who they received the funds from the Department of Commerce, how much they've been allocated, how much has been paid to them, and then what jobs they reported. So they reported 5.27 FTEs. It also identifies when the project started and when it's scheduled to end. One final search tool. Yes.
Do you keep statistics on how many hits you have on the website and or on the specific projects? I mean, how interested are Minnesotans in seeing that level of detail?
Level of information.
Besides the fact that it's required, how interested is the general public in getting that kind of information? And can you I would assume you can determine it. What's it look like?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rust, we do have a hit counter on the recovery site, the Recovery Min site, and that's over 20,000 hits that that's received since it went up in August. The mapping site is hosted by MinGeo, and I will defer to David Arbright in the event he knows the count, the most recent count.
Welcome to the Joint Committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Arbeit. I'm the state's geospatial information officer at MGIO, MinGeo. We collect data in terms of the number of sessions and downloads that come off the map. I don't have the specific data available now, but we can, you know, get back to you on that if you would like to know.
Mr. Chairman, sir, what's your general impression? Are people of the 20,000 hits, I guess you're part of that as a subset. Have you had 5,000 or 10,000or minimal? I mean, just I don't need an absolute number, but
yeah.
What's your impression at least,
Mr.
Arbeit?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, members of the committee, I the two numbers are separate from one another. For every one hit on that Michelle reported, there could be one or hundreds of hits on the map site, because once they leave that original map site, now the original ARRA site, they're coming to the map site. But I don't know what a reasonable expectation would be. But, you know, we have the numbers. We can make them available to you.
I'd like to have them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Oh, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we have you up at the table. Do you as an agency keep track of who is inquiring over your particular sites?
Mr.
Keep a list of that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Limmer, actually, no, there's no capability to do that.
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and committee members, just one final item on the map that I'd like to show you, and that is the ability to go in and search by address and zip code. And what this allows, it allows the user to enter an address and zip code and then see projects that might be in the surrounding area. So if you are interested in looking at what type of funding has been provided in a local community, you can enter in an address and zip code and get an overview of the projects that are in that area.
Any members want to offer a zip code you want us to punch in to see what's in your area? Senator Sieben?
55016.
55016.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, are you interested in a particular category of funding?
Can you look at all of them at once?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, we were having a problem with all of the funding loading because of some of the technology issues that we're having. Let me try. And Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I will also need an address in addition to the zip code.
6068 Summit Curve.
And the zip code?
55016.
So we have identified, the star represents the address that was entered into the system. The different funding categories then are represented by different color thumbtacks. So by scrolling over, you can see here the Math and Science Academy, they were allocated $57,000. Looking up to a light blue, this is the Washington County, they were allocated $161,000. We can click on then and get some additional information about what is the project, what state agency is administering it, how much was allocated, and if they reported any job impact as well. You can also use the scroll bars to change your view over here along the left-hand side of the screen. If we scroll down, we then get a closer view. So you can change your view on the map as well. The star still representing the address that we entered in to the system.
Anybody else want to look anything up? Okay. Anything else, Ms. Weber?
That's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Okay, well, thank you. And what was the website again? So if people want to go on it, they can look it up. What's the website?
Mr. Chair, the website is www.recovery.mn.
Mr. Chair, I may have missed this, but did the state receive money from the Recovery Act to set up the website, or what is the cost?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, no, we did not receive an allocation of federal funds. We are now working through what is called a statewide cost allocation plan that we submit to the federal government to try and recoup some of the state dollars that we spent. The initial development cost about $20,000, and some of the enhancements that we're looking at cost an additional $20,000. So it'll be about $40,000 for additional development of the, and that is for the mapping capabilities. And then there will be an update process that will cost us about $5,000 each quarter. So there is a cost associated.
And as Ms. Weber indicated, there have been discussions to try to refine the maps and so forth, even down to legislative districts, but do you do House districts, Senate districts? And most people don't even think of the legislative districts. They think of the cities that they live in. So it gets kind of complicated to try to, and we still have the same problems. If it crosses district boundary lines, where do you put the money? But it's a better tool than we've had before. So you can get some idea of just where the federal dollars are being spent. And as I say, we're trying to figure out how we can apply this to state dollars as well, too. But that's a few steps down the road. Okay, anything further? Thank you, Mr. Showalter. Ms. Weber, thank you. And the next item we have on the agenda is the Office of Enterprise Technology presentation on the National Association of Chief Information Officers Data Standards. Mr. Baden? Baden? Okay. Welcome to the Joint Committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairperson and ladies and gentlemen, members, this is my first time speaking in front of you folks, so if I'm a little awkward, please pardon me. I also found it very interesting that being the enterprise architect for the state, we didn't have a standard for PowerPoint, so the one that you're looking at doesn't have the pretty pictures on, but the information will get across to you just the same. We're here to talk about a broken PowerPoint.
To me all the time.
Well, you know what? We got disaster recovery right here. When all else fails, we've got here.
Well, we've got copies here too. So
sounds great.
Operate off of that. So.
We wanted to talk about data transparency and what it can lend us as a government and a society. And it's been an effort that's been going on for quite a long time, not just here in this country, but actually around the world. Across the UK, Australia, many other countries have been doing this work as well. And if you want to go to the first slide, which is what is data transparency, I'm going to kind of try to keep this straightforward and explain it. And if you're a technical person here, pardon me, I don't mean to patronize you at all. But if you think in terms of data versus information, they really are two different things. If you imagine, if you will, if everybody took out a business card right now and wrote down one word and put it in a bucket, we would have that data in a bucket, but it wouldn't really tell a story yet. It's just data. But if you took that and dumped it all out, each one of us could make our own story based on that data. And that's what we're really looking to do in data transparency, is we provide data for folks to use their own machinery in machine-readable format and apply their own business intelligence and apply their own technology to that data to come up with their own conclusions. It's a really interesting way of looking at how we do government as we move forward. It's a real change in paradigm. But it's really putting out those raw data sets. If we move to the data usage slide, we could have one data set or we could have multiple data sets. If you have one set of information, you could create one story. If you've got multiple data sets, you can start to create a complex story. I hang around with a bunch of nerds, so I was hanging around with a very good friend of mine who put together an iPhone application. And it's not ready for prime time yet, but essentially it looked at, and I just went through a knee replacement, so I'll just use me as the example, because when I saw it, I just went, holy buckets, the possibilities for this is amazing. It looked at the performance of all the doctors that did that particular type of surgery and measured them and compared them and contrasted them. And then I was able to actually search, find that doctor, and it brought up a map to that doctor as well as its phone number. So it's not just using data to look across agencies and across programs and across government and see how we deliver services across our government and mash all this data together and come up with our own assumptions, but it's also for building those little widgets that are going to be able to enable our life better in the future. There's a tremendous amount of possibility here, but I also want to guard on expectations. At this point, the way we deliver government is very program-centric, and we report very program-centric. And so the standards of that data across those different programs have not been unified. And that stems from a problem that starts at the federal level and works its way all the way down. We've got lots of standards committees that are working on that very problem right now, many across the country on the federal, state, and local level. But ultimately, we hope to solve that so that we can share data across all levels of government and we can answer those questions very clearly, very quickly. When we sat down as the state of Minnesota and we looked at the possibility of getting involved in this whole movement, what we wanted to do is, first thing I usually do is, who's already doing it, and what's working and what's not. And so we jumped on board with the NASIO group, and we got together with a number of state agencies. And one of the things they did caution about with us, and I'm still on the data usage slide, is the data inference. And that if you start laying multiple data sets on top of each other, you can start to grab conclusions that might collectively give out sensitive information. So one of the things that the other states or other states gave us that thought was real important, just for example, and again I'll just kind of use me as a physical example because I'm right here. If you put together the data of long-haired enterprise architects that are very passionate about technology and government that had knee replacements in the last 2 years, you'd probably put together that it's me pretty quickly, and that would also be data that could be potentially sensitive. It's not to me. I don't really care that you guys know it all, so I'm happy to put it out there. But if you think about the possibilities of how the combined data sets could potentially get out sensitive information, we also need to be somewhat guarded about how we do this. Not afraid to put our data out there, not afraid to show that what we do as a government and let people look in, but also we do need to be sensitive, however, that we make sure that the combination of that data doesn't potentially put out inference-type data that could causes some embarrassment or problem. Where do we look for this data? Is the next slide up. Well, if the question would be at the Minnesota Geographical, the Office of Demographics, the Federal Census site, well, therein lies the problem. It's all of the above. It's all over. And, in fact, when I first started looking at it, there was an online article, and I guess I could look it up again if I needed to, but there was an online article who listed out all the places that Minnesota had data, and I looked at that site and went, we've got to put this in one place so citizens can find this and people that want to find this data don't have to chase around. We make a lot of the data available already, but let's organize it in such a way that we can make it easy for them to find. So the transparency movement itself, as the new administration took over at the federal level, this was already an area that had momentum. Actually, Gopal, when I first worked at OET, Gopal was talking about this the second or third day I was here. He had been pushing this at a national level. And so it's not a partisan thing. It's a government thing. It's a way that we can democratize how we do government through data and put that information out there. So we think it's a good idea. As we move through what value it brings, the value potential is transparency. And our folks here at MMB in the presentation before this, I think are starting to realize the value of that transparency by putting that information out there already. And these are the first of many, many steps in the future. I see this as just the very, very first baby steps into this whole process. But the potential and the value proposition, I believe, is much more than we can even begin to calculate right now. I think it's going to be a much more powerful tool than we will have ever imagined if we look back in 5 or 10 years. It also really pulls in folks like my friend who made the widget for the iPhone, that it encourages participation from all over. You don't have to be a major organization with all sorts of business intelligence tools and predictive analytics to look at this data. A citizen can pull it into an Excel spreadsheet and come up with conclusions. It really opens the door for entrepreneurs and widget builders and folks like that to also build in and really use their imagination to do things in government that we would have never imagined before. It also really helps create an area for collaboration. If you start looking at the information, and we can base our thoughts on facts, and facts across a number of different areas, I actually think there's a really, really strong potential that as we collaborate with our citizens, it really will allow us to make better policy decisions long term as well.
Mr.
Chairman. Sir, are we doing that anywhere right now?
Ms. Biden.
Mr. Chairman, members.
Potential, I mean, is it happening?
The stimulus package is a good example of how that's starting here within the state. At the national level, data.gov is doing a really interesting job. In fact, they've actually created contests and things like that for people coming up with widgets for how to use this data and further it. In fact, they've even come up with contests for building applications for using the data.
Go ahead. Okay.
Thank you. It was at that point when we jumped in, and when Gopal was the president of the National Association of Chief Information Officers. And we said, let's get on board with the other states, see what everyone else is doing. Let's learn by participating, and let's get our toes in the water on this subject. So what we learned coming out of those meetings, and we participated, in fact, Elena Scope should get credit for this back here as a data architect. She put together the first high-level draft of the meta model that came out of that document. It was a really, really interesting collaboration and just really a starting point. And what it was a call to action for states to step into this arena. And we agreed and we participated, and I think it was a very good message that we put out. We did come up with some guiding principles, though, right out of the gates, and that was that don't try to do too much too fast. Manage the scope carefully. Don't just roll out piles of data sets. And one of the states that did, and there were three states, as my memory serves me correctly at the time, it was Utah, California, and Washington, D.C. And Utah, they had rolled out a fairly substantial amount. They had put out like 10 or 12 data sets. And what they found was, the good news is people were using them. They were getting 200 or 300 hits on each data set. So people were using them, and what they also said is, careful what you wish for, because they're going to use them. They're going to use them to tell all sorts of stories, and we need to be prepared for that. So it was just a good note from my perspective. Standardizing the meta model for search capability for things like geospatial as well, so that folks can map these items also. We did create that forum for cross-state collaboration, and also we brought in the federal person who put together the original data.gov policy, and we used that as our starting point. It was actually some really good work that had already been done. The data.gov site that's up at the federal level is a really good starting point if you haven't had a chance to check that out. At that point, we got a sense for what we thought Minnesota should do and what we should not do. And at that point, we just said, let's get into this. And so we started looking at our as-is. And currently, we started looking around at the state sites, and we found about 600 different areas that we have data. So 600 different sites just at the state level, not including local, federal, all those different areas. There could be as many as 13. We seem to keep on, or 1,300. We keep on finding them all the time. So it's just we're in the early analysis phase. Ultimately, where we'd like to get to is we'd like to at least build some sort of front-end site that can attach all these so that people can find them easier and we can at least get them in one place. We also wanted to take the advice of NASIO and pick 10 to 15. We're targeting more at the 15 level, initial data sets right out of the gate that we think would be good value propositions type things right out of the gate, things that don't have security implications that could potentially harm someone. I came out of the HIPAA area, so I'm a little overly. I'm very sensitive to security and privacy, and I'm really sensitive to how you can imply that through data sets, and so my going in position is to be a little bit more conservative, but yet let's do it too. So I've got that balance of I really want to get the data sets out there, but I want to do it in an organized, careful manner. As we work into the phase one work that we're doing, we want to get those 15 sets out, at least get a good static web page that we can connect those dots and get those first static or those first data sets out there so we can get a sense for what the demand might be in here in Minnesota and what the sense is around the community. Are these things valuable to you? Do we have the right data sets? Is it in the right format? We can put it out there as CSV files so people can put them in Excel spreadsheets, or we can put them out there in an XML format that people can put into their relational database systems and apply their business intelligence to or build their widgets for their iPhones with. We want to get a sense for that. In fact, our phase two is to implement a whole set of feedback loops, and the problem now is we've got to keep the scope at a manageable size. We're all doing it somewhat in our part-time. We don't have dedicated staff working on it. We have people working on it somewhat part-time. And as soon as those data sets get large and you need to make sure that the quality and the integrity of the data is there and that the security inference items are not there, it grows in complexity quickly. And along with that complexity, it takes resource. So we wanted to make sure that we could do it within scope and make sure we understood what we were getting into before we expanded the scope much further. Beyond that, the other thing that a couple of the other states really have found exciting, and in fact, I was just talking with Utah about this today, and they've not only built in a feedback loop of what data sets would you like to see more of, how are you using it, contests to use that data, but they've all got it now built into Twitter so that every time there's the new version of the data comes out, they broadcast and say, this month's version of this data set is out there. And they found that to be very, very effective in that within the first day of that Twitter announcement going out, that's when they get the 200 or 300 hits per data set. So we would like to eventually get that built into the process as well. The possibilities are much more than I think at this point we can even imagine. In the same mouthful, I believe you folks are on the right track with pursuing this as an opportunity for bettering government.
Any questions? This ties into the next topic we have on the agenda. Any questions, Mr. Bed? Well, then let's
very
talk
interesting.
About.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the next part.
Mr. Chairperson, members, thank you very much, everybody.
The next item on our agenda is a proposal coming from Senator Betzel to be introduced in the 2010 session requiring the State Chief Information Officer to develop standards for enhanced public access to state electronic records. Senator Betzel is going to be joined by Mr. Dean. Is that correct? Senator Betzold, yeah,
Madam Chair and members, as you've just heard, we have multiple websites and so forth, there is inconsistencies in them, and we do want to try to make it easier for the public to pull it all together. I do commend the Office of Enterprise Technology for their work so far and going ahead with it, but keep in mind, although most state employees are still going to be in their position a year from now, we're going to have a different administration, different legislature coming on in, so I'll be introducing a bill in the 2010 session that you see that's part of your packet here, which basically directs the Office of Enterprise Technology to establish a position for a state webmaster, which is going to oversee this project and making sure that these standards are going to be met, and then report back to next year's legislature on how all this is going to be done. That, in, really, in a nutshell, is what it is. You already heard the presentation on it. We have the other witness here. Who wants to? Come on forward.
Senator Betzold,
yes.
I noticed in looking through this, although you're creating a new position, do you expect the department to absorb the cost? Do you expect the department to absorb the cost?
Right now, that would be the anticipation, given the fact that we have. But we'll be discussing it. Go ahead.
Okay. Just want to make
a welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Dean. I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Minnesota, a nonpartisan government watchdog group.
Yeah.
Common Cause is here to support Senator Betzold's bill requiring the state chief information officer develop standards for enhanced public access to state electronic records. Openness and transparency in government is critical to the strength of our democracy. As U.S. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis said, referring to the benefits of openness and transparency in government, sunlight is the best disinfectant. That's why this issue tends to be supported on both sides of the aisle. Our government collects a lot of information about the public, and it's time that the public had more information on the activities of their government. This legislation is a step in the right direction to make existing public data more accessible to the people own. Not too long ago, we could rely on the Fourth Estate, the media, to play that oversight role. With the destruction of the financial model that supports traditional media outlets, it has become too expensive for the media to provide this valuable community service. In a vibrant democracy, someone must fill that void and create a new model for government oversight in which the citizens can play a crucial role. While technology may be partly responsible for the decline of traditional media outlets, it can also be the tool that helps us revitalize our democracy. Senator Betzold's bill is the foundation that will allow the state to make itself more open and transparent. Creating basic standards for distribution of electronic records will begin the process of making information more accessible. We do have one concern about the bill. It does not require that the process to create these new standards be open and transparent. How ironic would it be if the standards to make government information more transparent were not developed with public input or debate? We urge you to add language requiring open hearings and public comment periods so the public has an opportunity to weigh in on the process. There is a growing community of technology experts that are passionate about open government initiatives. The state has an opportunity to tap into their collective knowledge to develop standards that work for government officials and the public. We also hope that this legislation is just the start of something some larger conversations about how to make government more open and transparent. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Are there comments or questions for witness, Mr. Dean? Senator Betzold, do you have a response to the suggestion of the process?
As you're aware, Madam Chair, we can't really be voting on anything at this stage, but the bill's already been jacketed and will be introduced. But as it comes before this committee and move through the process, obviously that's a worthwhile suggestion, so we'll take a look at it.
Are there other comments or other questions? Anyone else care to comment on the proposal?
Sounds good.
Seeing none, Senator Betzold, there's no further business before the committee, and so we stand adjourned.
And the policy committee meets tomorrow, right?
Beg pardon?
Your committee meets
tomorrow. The policy committee meets tomorrow for a review of ranked choice voting. See you there.